This is a Federal News Network podcast.
The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement on Federal News Network. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy, trends, innovations, and debates. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Joanne Wojtek. Joanne is the program director for NASA SEWP. That's one of the government-wide IT GWACs out there that are authorized by the Office of Management and Budget, and a very successful one, I might add. This past fiscal year, NASA SEWP saw a 40% growth in overall purchases by customer agencies under the program, growing to $9 billion just this past fiscal year. So, Joanne, first of all, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on, and congratulations on a fantastic, incredible fiscal year 2020, right?
Yes, it's FY20. Yes. Thank you for having me here, and yes, thank you for the nice words. We're very excited, and as I always say, a little scared. It's a lot of money, but we feel the great responsibility of making sure we do the best with what we have been given. So.
Right. And while, you know, I want to talk a lot about all the things you're doing around your customer and your industry partners. So how long now, how old is NASA SEWP? It was like the first government-wide contracting vehicle, if I recall, back in the early 90s, I think, something like that.
Yeah, February of 93 is when the SEWP-1 awards were signed and started. So we're into 27 years. Yes.
So you're gonna have a big anniversary here in a few years, right?
Yeah, we did. Well, we did have a big party for 25. I don't know.
Yes, I recall that. And right now, currently, can you talk a little bit about how many companies you have on the contract and what's the breakdown between small and other than small businesses?
So we have 141 companies with 200 different contracts. Some of them have multiple contracts, and 118 of them are small businesses. We've always found ways to be supportive. It was a little different in the early days when we had 8 companies and maybe 6 of them were large companies. But in the more recent years, as we've grown and how we operate, been very supportive of the small business groups. And as a note about small businesses, is 81% of the dollars through SEWP 5, which is 5.5 years in, have gone to small businesses.
Right. That's a great record. And just in terms of products versus services, can you talk a little bit about that?
So through SEWP 4, through the first 4 SEWPs, we were primarily product-oriented. We did try to start shifting in SEWP 4 to some solutions, and we did, in fact, changed our name to Solutions for Enterprise-Wide Procurement to emphasize that piece of it. But with SEWP 5, we made a conscious decision to increase services offerings to include almost any type of service that you can tie to a product. That's a pretty broad statement. So we always allowed for, you know, the basics like warranty and installation, but now you hire an engineer to work on your networks, not just for maintenance, but actually have a continuing service relationship with companies. So that has increased that's part of our growth has been that increase in usage because services are now available.
Right, is cloud services part of the package?
Yes, cloud services. So the overall scope of SEWP is, if it's IT, it's in scope. That's the bottom line. If it's hardware, software, cloud, if it's communications, it's in scope. Any type of communications from radios to phones to satellite communications to some very interesting communications that go on out there, that's all in scope. And then the last big piece of the puzzle is audiovisual. Anything in the audiovisual world is also in scope, including all the video conferencing and teleconferencing. Of course, I'm seeing a lot of that with the COVID and people buying more software for support of that.
Yeah, there's power and simplicity. So you got, if it's IT, which is in scope, that works for me.
Yes.
So again, you had a fabulous year this past year And I wanted to get into like just your thoughts on what do you attribute that, you know, the growth year in and year out, and particularly this past year, what do you attribute that consistent growth pattern to in terms of the program?
So just to set where we're at, we've been going about 25% a year. So it's not unusual for us to grow. 40% was bigger than we've done in the past, but still it has been a steady one. So, and it's been steady from, I've been involved from the beginning, and we've always grown every year that SUP has existed. All 27 years there's been growth involved. And it's because we are very simple, but not always easy to follow through view. And that is, we're here for the customer, and that's it. You know, we're not here to make money. We're not here to grow. We're not here to solve something outside of what we're here for. We are here to serve the government customer and to make it as easy as possible for industry to work with government and vice versa. And that formula seems to work, and people come and use us, and we keep adding to it. It's not, and say it's simple, and people come to us and we say, "Well, can I just do what you do?" I'm like, "Yeah, give yourself 20 years, build up the facility, the hardware, the software, the staff, and then you can do what we do." So there's a lot of complexity behind that simple statement. A lot of the growth is simply that more people, you know, hear about us and use us, and they're always surprised, or often surprised. I won't say always. There's always some outliers who aren't, but often surprised by how customer service oriented we are, how fast we are in what we do, how responsive we are, and how knowledgeable the staff is, and the tool sets that we provide. That all combines to good news for the folks who are looking for a way to get to ID and not having to go through some of the hoops they have to go through on their own without a vehicle like ours.
Right. The streamlined ordering process.
Yes.
So who are your biggest customers, or just how does your, you know, profile of customer base look?
So DOD, they have the money. Right. So they're number one.
Yep. Clearly. They're everybody's number one, right?
Yes. So whether you take them as a whole or in pieces, Veterans Affairs, number two. And those two have been one and two for as long as I can remember. We have been supportive of that and very proud of our support of the VA. Justice Department, State Department, very large customers of ours, Treasury, Commerce, a lot of the major ones. One that has jumped up, one of the reasons we have grown, well, there are two agencies in particular that have increased. One of them is part of DOD, that's the Air Force, and the other is Homeland Security. So one other thing to note is that every single government agency uses our contracts. So we're not, even though I'm naming a few of them, I could keep going. And you can name every cabinet level agency and pretty much every committee, organization, we are pretty much, and GSA are the two contracts that every government agency has usage of on a regular basis. That means that we also, when you talk about growth, we have to be responsive to every possible agency. We're not trying to just be
right
working with DOD. We're not just trying to be there. We have to make sure that what we do is flexible enough for everybody. And of course, NASA. I didn't mention them. We are a NASA group, and we are getting more support through NASA than we've had before, in terms of they've made some organizational changes, and they did leverage us more in the past year, and I think that's going to continue on also. So we are very happy with that, because NASA, of course, is our home
right. place. Right, and GSA uses you as well, right?
GSA is just a little bit below NASA in terms of usage. Some of it is internal GSA, and some of it is their federal services.
Their assisted services?
Yeah, assisted services, yes. Yeah. And we often get that question from our customers, because we don't do assisted services in SUP. So we'll get that question, can I MIP you money? And the answer is no. Here's GSA and also DISA, who also does assisted services. There are two main assisted services. And there are a few other ones that do it, but those are the two main ones.
Right. Well, and part of customer satisfaction is your fees are low. And I think, are you again lowering your fees?
Yes.
For the current fiscal year?
Right. So we have, as I mentioned, we don't do this for the money. I like making money in the sense that I can then use it to make us be better. And we have increased our staff and what we do. But we also continuously look at how much we're getting in those fees and how much we can reasonably use to assist our customers. And if we're getting in more than we can use, we lower the fee. And a little history that we originally started at 2.6%, and that was the lowest fee in the government in 93. We are now down to 0.34% as of October 1st. So we dropped from 0.36 to 0.34. In light of that growth that we talked about, we want to make sure that we're doing more, but we're also giving back to the customers who use it so much.
Right. So, and Joanne, we're right up on the break. So when we come back, I want to continue sort of talking about that customer focus and a lot of the very innovative and interesting things that you and your team at NASA Soup are doing with regard to providing customer support and support for your industry partners as well. My guest today is Joanne Wojtek. She is the program director for NASA Soup. I'm Roger Waldron, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. I'm Roger Waldron, and my guest today is Joanne Wojtek. Joanne is the program director for NASA Soup, and NASA Soup is coming off, record year in terms of the customer agency purchases through the program at $9 billion, 40% increase year over year. And I guess this segment, just dive a little deeper into your customer support. And, the first thing I want to talk to you about is just get that sense of how you guys, your strategies, your approach, your day-to-day support and manage your contract holders so they can continue to provide the great support that and service they do to the federal customer.
Yeah, so obviously we start with the government customers, but as you mentioned, it actually is part of our what we provide the government customer is that we sit between them and industry. And I see one of our main jobs, if not our main job, is to be that information conduit between the two. So we're not trying to insert ourselves in. And why is that good for our customer? Because then they get to decide how they want to interact and what they need. And we're not trying to force them into a pattern. And I think what has made Soup successful over 20 some years is that we actually have a philosophy that filters through all the entire staff. The customer is first, the customer is important. Responsiveness. We measure ourselves in hours now and not even in days in terms of response. So just being there for our customer, we always have people checking to make sure that if the question is too complex, that the right person gets to it quickly. It's not going to sit there for a while. Multiple people are always on that because every staff has that built into their being. Part of how we hire people is, are you going to come to us and have that customer orientation? So staff is number one, providing the tool sets, always looking for ways to improve how we interact with them. Also helps that interaction. And then building a relationship with industry is important because, as I said, we're a conduit between the two. And if we just take the view of we're here for the government and not industry, we're not going to understand how they operate either way. So we want to understand both how the government works and how industry works. We were one of the first vehicles many, many years ago to have a contract holder relationship management team, which has become more important with 140 companies. But we also deal with 8,000 providers. These are original manufacturers and service providers. So we have an industry team now, and we just started that a year or so ago, which is tied specifically to those 8,000 companies to talk, not to talk to each one of them individually, obviously, but to be there to interact when they have questions and understand them and where they're coming from, because they don't have a contract doesn't mean they're not important in the supply chain world and how the customer is going to get what they want. So when a customer comes to us, they're going to get the full breadth of support from what they need to get done from the technical side, the procurement side, and how is industry going to respond from the contract holder side and the actual manufacturer or service provider.
All right. So do you sort of see yourself, you're obviously you're a facilitator in a certain sense, right? That bridge between government and industry. It's almost like you create a market that you help in a certain sense manage or provide that facilitates the ability to do, I hate to use the word frictionless, but I guess I will, task orders,
yes.
Competition and ordering for your customer. And how do your industry partners view the program from that perspective?
I think that's part of our success because we're not there to tell industry how to operate either. I mean, I sometimes argue with my government customers about something. They'll say, well, why don't you make industry do X? And it's like, well, that's not how industry operates. And if I try to make them do X, they can do it, but it costs them money. And therefore, it's going to cost you money because they're going to have to charge more. So do you really need to do this or should you do it the way that industry works? And I've always been in government, so I can't say I always know industry, but I hire for that. That's what I have staff for. And quite a few number of my staff comes from industry because I want us to know how industry operates, what drives them, what makes them operate in the most efficient way. And I say I, but by I mean the entire staff, can then interact in a knowledgeable way about both sides of the equation. And so I feel like we do build a really good relationship with those companies because we are there to understand them and not tell them how to run their business.
Right. So, and part of that too is, and it sounds like you're doing in the sense you have that industry team, but you know, you mentioned in the first segment that the scope of the contract is IT.
Right.
Well, that is a broad scope, but it's an ever changing scope too, right? It's as technology evolves, and changes over time. So how do you sort of manage that, staying ahead of the curve or on the wave of technological change and ensuring that the companies will offer that, you know, as well as your customers who want it, you know, can interact through your contract vehicle?
Well, so the first step is when we do an iteration of the soup contracts, we try to make sure that the scope is stated up front to be as broad as needs to be. And and it's an interesting technology is a whole other topic. to me, I come from the technology side of the world. In some ways it changes all the time. And in some ways it's exactly the same. You talked about cloud and, you know, cloud seems like, a fairly new idea, but back in the day, I remember having an ex-Windows terminal and basically I was working in the cloud. I just didn't call it that back in the 70s and 80s. So terminology changes and the technology that drives it changes in how it works, but the basics of what you're doing is still remains the same. So we're able to keep the scope relatively good. We do have some scope that people want and we don't cover, like we don't have drones, for example. We are often asked about that. It was not put into the original scope. I can't connect it. Will it be connected in the next version? Don't know. We'll have to decide that. So there are some technologies like that. The other piece that makes us operate, though, is that we are very we have a process for adding products and services that allows for a quick turnaround. We change 11,000 items a day on our contract, and on average, it's less than an hour to make a change. Assuming everything that is being added is in scope, priced correctly, and described well, it's going to get on fairly quickly. If it's not one of those things, then it won't get added. So it does require a process, and we have a lot of pieces that make that process work. There's a lot that goes behind that, both technologically and from the human point of view. But it's a very key part of our ability to make sure our customer gets what they want and not just what was set up, you know, 6 years ago when the contracts were started.
Well, 11,000, how 11,000 items when? A day, did you
say? A day, yes.
Wow. So in that context, you must have an automated system or something that supports that effort. Can you talk a little about that? That's remarkable to me. You know, just thinking about other contract vehicles and the fact that you really are reflecting the market when things, because do things change that much?
Well, they change, but they don't change as much as all that. So for, it's a semi-automated process. There is a lot that goes on before any human sees what's being responded to that filters out issues, lets us know, like if something's on 10 other contracts and it's the same price, it's really easy to add that. If something's on 10 other contracts and a very different price, well, then we have to spend some time looking at it. And the system flags those sorts of, and many other pieces of concerns that we might have. So we're only concentrating on those things that don't match what should easily go on the contract. And if they don't, then we do exclude. Not everything that is asked for gets on the contract. It has to be right or it doesn't. And so, yes, it's speedy, But we actually have more control and more insight into the contract than I think anybody who takes months doing it, because we actually are looking at every line item. And we are actually having it either automatically or and or by human, looking at price and clinic, yeah, and part number and provider. And all those pieces are looked at and made sure that they're correct before they can get added.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And Joanne, we're already up on the break. So when we come back, I mean, you're doing a lot of customer focused stuff as well. And, you know, one of the things I want to start the conversation with next segment is the CIO portal. And what is that? And talk a little about that. And we'll talk about some of the other things that you're doing on the customer side. I'm Roger Waldron. My guest today is Joanne Wojtek. She is the program director for NASA SOUP, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on the Federal News Network. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. I'm Roger Waldron. My guest today is Joanne Wojtek. She's the program director for NASA SOUP. NASA SOUP just finished up FY 2020. With $9 billion in sales, about a 40% increase over the previous year, continuing its long-term growth over the life of the program. Again, Joanne, congratulations on that. And, you know, it's not by accident that these things happen. And your program's been very innovative in, you know, your approaches to managing the contracts and also your customer focus. And I know one of the things that you've launched is called the CIO portal. So I want to hear more about that. And we'll talk about some of the customer initiatives that you guys are working on or have in place or planning on putting in place. So CIO portal, what is that, Joanne?
So back through SOUP 4, when somebody would ask me, what's happening on SOUP? Like what's being bought? My answer would be, I don't know. And it was very specific. Plan on our part to not know anything about what was going on at the order level and other than the dollar amounts. And when we were approaching SOUP 5, I went to the Goddard CIO at the time and said, you know, would you like me to track all this stuff for you? And his eyes lit up and said, yeah, absolutely. So we changed our approach with SOUP 5, and now we track everything and that a CIO could want that we are able to. You know, we still are limited by what we know. We don't have direct input into, you know, the financial systems and the ordering systems, but we do see every order and we do have information in flow between ourselves, our customers, and industry that tells us a lot about them. So from the beginning of SOUP 5, which was 5.5 years ago, we've been offering and more agencies are taking us up on providing a regular reporting of what is being purchased by their agency. And in the past few months, we have put together a online system so they don't have to ask us for those reports and get a spreadsheet. They can now go on and graphically look at what's being bought, you know, who's buying them, what, you know, how much is going through our system from their agency. They can pull up orders, I believe, certainly the order information that we have, trying to give the CIO that insight that Vitara and other requirements are, you know, want them to have. And when we talk about growth, there's another reason for our growth. You know, it's nice to have the CIOs want people to use us because they know that they can then get that information that may not be available elsewhere.
That really is something that I think is quite powerful, understanding what you're buying, which, you know, often in government, right, cross agencies, you know, people are duplicating efforts or, you know, you really don't get the handle on, at least when I was in government, like exactly knowing what the right hand was doing versus the left hand. So
I also think point out the beginning part of that is the agency catalog concept that we started with SOUP 5, which is even before the ordering comes, or a procurement head or whoever is dealing with what products they want to purchase, and they can say, I want these products to be put into a place where my agency go to and buy from. So NASA, for example, has a list of products that have been vetted by the CIO for purchase. So we now have a place that anybody at NASA can go to and buy, and they don't have to look up whether those items are vetted or not. Those items are on our system as NASA vetted items. You know, and so an agency can set that up. So even before the purchase occurs, they have some control and insight into what's happening. And we also have one agency now who gets reports on RFQs that are out there for their agency. So it's not just a post-order insight. We want to help those CIOs and other decision makers have access to information.
Yeah, that's good stuff. So some other things you're doing. So can you tell, there's customer odyssey team, and also, you're creating some customer liaison positions. Well, what are those two initiatives about?
So the customer liaison occurred. We used to be a very small staff, and dealing with the entire government, we would pretend like every agency we had one person working with them, but they were probably working. We work with everybody. The nice part about growth is I'm able to put some staff resources into agencies that have a specific need or a very increased need for support. I mentioned Homeland Security, for example, very large agency, lots of pieces to it. So they were actually the first liaison we put together. We now have a NASA liaison, although in some ways we had it before, it's now official, that is there to help with things like the catalog concept I just talked about for NASA. So not every agency with 100 some different types that we have out there will have a one-to-one, but focusing some of our customer support to not just be the broad anybody call anybody, but if you're from a certain agency, you might have somebody who's more knowledgeable in that arena. And as we grow, I'd like to grow that concept so we know more about those agencies that have especially their unique ways of working.
Right. So on that's the customer side of things, and what the Odyssey team? Can you talk a bit more about that?
My background, I said it was technology, but I've always been a customer focused technology person. That's how I started out at NASA from the very beginning. My customer was a scientist at the time. As I looked at where web interfaces were going, including our own, I realized a year and a half or two ago that things haven't changed that much in the past 20 years. And what we're doing now is not that much better. And I just felt that there had to be something better out there, not both technology-wise, but also in terms of like psychology of how customers operate. What is it that drives a customer to understand what's on your site and how do you better interact with them so it's clear what's going on? We think when we put something on our site that is clear to people and then they ask a question that's like, I don't understand how they didn't catch that. So we're missing something. We have lots of information, which they like, but we have too much information, which they don't like. So how do we marry that? How do we provide the best interface and not the one that people are doing now? That's what we can do with our current team. My question is, where are we going to be 5 to 10 years from now? What is it that we can start working on now that will really touch on, again, not just technology, but psychology and the interface of the human machine interface that we talk about. So I started a team. It now has 3 members and we'll have more this year to start looking into research and development of how we interface in those ways, whether it's emails or websites or tools or the phone or some new technology that maybe we haven't necessarily thought of. And the one thing I regret about the COVID situation is we were going to go down to Disney, for example, in the customer experience conference, and that's sort of thought, a place that I think is probably doing those sorts of things that I want to see how we can bring that into what we do. Looking ahead, not looking just at where people are.
Yeah. Interesting. That's fascinating stuff. And you have to start thinking, right? You just exercise the option, right? So.
Right. The technology of this, a technology leap of this type doesn't happen tomorrow. It happens. It takes years. And it's something you build upon and you test out and you try. So, If we're gonna do something new and exciting, I want to get it started now. We'll actually use what we find when we can in the current operational system, but we're also looking at what we can do in the next system, not necessarily tied to Soup 6, but just tied to Soup as a program.
Right. So we have about a minute and a half left or so in this segment. So can you talk a little bit about the online provider portal and what that is?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, we've had the contract holder interface, we had the government interface, and then we realized we have 8,000 companies out there who we want to interface with. So we now have a what we call a provider tool. It is now just being used for supply chain information, but we'll be using it in the future in ways for any of those companies to have a direct interface with what we are working on that they should have. Still in sort of in development, but it does at least give them access to managing who is authorized resellers of their products directly on our site.
And that, well, we're up on the break. So when we come back, I want to touch on a couple things, just, how your team responded to COVID, maybe 889 a little bit, and just, thoughts on a renewed focus on the internal and external education and training of everybody who deals with NASA Soup. And then just we'll finish up by talking about where you go in the future and your thoughts on that and the challenges from your perspective. I'm Roger Waldron. My guest today is Joanne Witek. She is the program director for NASA Soup, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network.
When the world calls for advanced electronics, we respond with C4 ISR breakthroughs. When the world calls for defense from cyber threats, we provide groundbreaking cyber solutions. When the world calls for a revolution in autonomous technology, Northrop Grumman is there. At Northrop Grumman, we're constantly innovating to deliver the most effective and affordable solutions to our customers. Whether it's cyber, logistics, autonomous systems, C4ISR, or strike, that's the value of performance. Northrop Grumman. To learn more, visit northropgrumman.com/performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. I'm Roger Waldron. My guest today is Joanne Witek. Joanne is the program director for NASA Soup, and NASA Soup's come off its biggest year yet in terms of government purchases through their through the program, about $9 billion. And again, congratulations to NASA Soup and the entire team. Joanne, this all happened also during the course of a pandemic. And I'd be interested to hear just how your team's approach to, shifting to probably a virtual world, just like everybody else, working remotely and just transitioning and handling operations in a different and fundamentally different way. So how'd you guys do it?
So we were fortunate in that we had been working on moving our computing system into a better spot. That we were in an offsite building. We now have a dual system. So computer-wise, we had a good server system set up. But then also, while we were primarily not teleworking at the time, we had set ourselves up within the staff to be able to telework at any given time. And about a year or so before this COVID thing, we had a fire in our building, and we had to have an essential fire test. It was not planned. We were closed down for a week, and so we knew we could do a virtual work environment and not affect our customers. So when this occurred in March, and we got it, shut down all the facilities, we were pretty confident that we had our infrastructure set up, and we did. We had the teams already understanding how to operate in that environment. It was a very smooth changeover. I think the biggest effects we are seeing is meetings, trainings, how to do those virtually. But the basic operation has worked very smoothly.
Yeah. I'd be interested in your insights real quick on this. It's just the idea of, it has worked for everybody, but I don't know if you feel the same way. There's nothing like being in the same office, being able to walk next door and bounce ideas off, your peers or your coworkers, colleagues about things. And no matter what you do, it seems like that's tough to replicate that. Is that your sense of it?
Right. Yeah. Obviously, we try with virtual meetings, and there's a lot more of those because of that. And we do have a number of activities that occur, both job related and just personal related, where we allow people to kind of get together at times. My expectation as I look to the future is that we will probably never go back to the way we were before. But I do think there's a lot to be gained by having some amount of interaction personally. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to the day when we can at least get back to the office, because you do lose something, and you lose some. I think the work continues, but it's a little bit more intensive because you can't just walk next door. You can ping somebody, but then that's not quite the same. There's nothing that can change for that.
Yeah, I think I think the word balance, you're going to find a new balance, yes, right, between, work in person versus work remotely. So, and I agree with you. I don't think it's ever going to be the same. We're just going to find a new balance. Right. So, Another area that, you know, is top of mind of the procurement community, I think, you know, just in lots of areas, is supply chain. And, you know, particularly Section 889 was, you know, was basically rolled out in regulations this past year. How did you handle that, and where are you guys on that?
So shout out to the wonderful contracting and contract holder relationship management team at Soup. 140 companies, 141, you know, 200 contracts had to get updated for these clauses. While we were hoping that we wouldn't have to, we did not see the certifications occurring in a way that was fast enough for us. So we went out and first modified all the contracts to meet all the clauses that needed to be in place for 889. And then we had just completed certifying all of our companies against the 889 requirements. So every one of our companies has certified themselves as meeting those 889 requirements. And next week, we'll be posting that. It's available now if somebody sent us an email if a government customer wanted to see that certification. But starting next week on our website, we will have that certification for each company available so it can be pulled down and put into documentation form for our procurement folks.
Yeah, so, and just generally on supply chain, Nestle Soup's always been a leader in terms of, you know, addressing, you know, counterfeit and, you know, and authorized dealers and things like that. Right. Did you have lessons learned from that sort of helped in with regard to 889 or?
Well, I think it's just, we've always understood the importance of working again closely with industry and then how to post that information. So, not a mandatory requirement, for example, but one that we are pushing more of our contract holders to do is sign up for the ISO 20243 standard, which is a supply chain standard. And we've already set up our website to notify when that's happened. So we already have one situation where we're telling people about it. And then, you know, the authorized reseller, we've also set up the infrastructure for how do we certify that somebody's authorized, and then how do we display it on our website. So we've thought about these issues. 889 is a little different, but it's not totally outside the realm of things we've already done. So it's been pretty quick for our technical team to change the website to add this information to what we do.
Yeah. So I want to shift again a little bit. And I know your sort of mantra or, you know, working sort of philosophy is often happy, but never satisfied. And along those lines, one of the things that I noticed in your press release about Nestle Soup's FY20 performance is that you were looking to a renewed focus on internal and external education, training, data quality, and contextual analysis. So is that, you know, why are you doing, is that part of that often happy, never satisfied? You got, you know, it's that drive for excellence. Why are you focusing on those things?
Right. Yeah, that definitely is our continuous drive. You know, even being successful doesn't work if you don't keep working at it. One of the things that happened is our staff has grown. We're over 100 people now, and we're virtual. And what we realized is that not everybody on staff understands the basics of the system anymore, because we're not sitting there next to each other talking about it. We don't have a good system for providing that flow of knowledge. So we're going to be more focused this year on how do we educate our internal staff, not to know every little detail of procurement, but to be, you know, knowledgeable enough that it makes sense to them where they fit into the infrastructure of procurement and the Soup program. So we're working on what are the pieces that make that a better part, more than just the knowledge of what they have to know from day to day to do their job, but how do they fit into the overall infrastructure. And then when we talk about data and analytics, we have a lot of data. We have some of the best quality of data that I believe is out there on a number of areas, and particularly about the products that are being sold and as mentioned, the ordering information. But how do we actually build that into a even better structure, more easily accessible? This the concept that we talked about with the CIO portal. How do we make that even more usable? both internally and externally. So it makes so it's the right information. I don't want to just give people data if it's bad information. It has to be the right information. So we need to really hire staff and put in tools that will allow for that.
All right. So so that's investing in your people fundamentally, right? At the end of the day, that's what makes the difference. So we have about a minute left, and I just wanted to get, you know, think about people, like, to just get your personal perspective on what you know, your challenges and what you've seen in your role in sort of managing the growth of the program over the years, and how you've done that, and what you've tried to accomplish, and what the challenges have been.
So the parts that you just mentioned from the press release, that all comes from something that I used to poo-poo about, which is strategic planning. You know, who needs that? And when you're 15 people, maybe you don't need strategic planning. And when you're, you know, dealing with a small group, you don't need it. I really realized more so than ever before in the past year or two with the growth that we've gone through, and both usage and staff, that we needed to be strategic, not just in thought, but to really write it down and build up a plan and make sure that we can execute against it. I'm extremely happy with the results that the staff have put together to support that. And the fact that I have a great staff that helps me do that, because I'm not that type of person. But so you bring the people in that are, and I appreciate that, because we do have now a strategic plan. I hope to keep that rolling every year, building it up. A new mission and vision statement that we put together, so clear on to ourselves and to others that the issues that you talked about, the concepts that we're dealing with, and make sure it's clear why we're doing it to ourselves and others.
Right. And you're presumably starting to think about the next iteration, right? It's you've exercised the option, right?
So we started on, as we like to say, we started that on May 1st, 2020, when, right. 2015 when we signed.
When you ordered it, yeah.
Yeah. When Soup 5 was started, we were starting to think about Soup 6 internally. And yes, and it more so now in terms of things have changed in some of the ways procurements operate. And we feel like we can come up with an even better vehicle as with all the knowledge that's coming out there. So yeah. I'm sure we'll be back in a year or two talking about the Soup 6.
I'm definitely going to have back and get your thoughts on what the future of procurement sort of looks like moving forward. Because there will be changes, and you and your team are going to be reacting to those changes in the market, both from a government, requirements perspective, but also what's available and that connection that you create between the customer and industry. So, Joanne, thanks so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.
I want to thank my guest today, Joanne Wojtek. She's Program Director of NASA Soup. I'm Roger Waldron, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement on Federal News Network. Tune in Tuesday mornings at 11 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.